T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, May 3rd. How are we doing this morning? Talking Golf is brought to you by Travelers Insurance for auto, home, and business. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. So lots to discuss this morning, and I'm looking forward to catching up with Brando Chambly of the Golf Channel and Chip Beck, Mr. 59. Well, Brando, as you know, is a most opinionated personality on the telly who talks about golf and lots of strong opinions. Recently, he criticized modern-day golf instruction by saying, in quotes, "Golf teachers are being exposed for their idiocy." And he went on to say that, in quotes, "flawed teaching philosophies end more careers than help," end quote. Back in December, he called Patrick Reed a cheater. He criticized Brooks Koepka for bulking up to be photographed for an ESPN cover. And getting back to his thoughts on the golf swing, Chambly has had a lot to say about Jordan Spieth and his swing changes. And a couple years back, Tiger's swing changes. He said, in quote, "Tiger got the least out of his talent more than anyone in history," unquote. So no doubt, Brando Chambly makes bold, opinionated statements on the air or when he's being interviewed. And needless to say, these statements create a firestorm of controversy and attention. Now, I like Brando Chambly's work very much. I feel that sports, particularly golf commentary, which can be mellow, quiet, and very diplomatic most of the time, I think we need people who have strong opinions and who aren't afraid to express them if they are qualified to say them and if they are honest about why they are expressing these opinions. If Brando truly believes these statements that he's made, then good for him. He is in a position to express them. If he or anyone is just trying to be outrageous, you know, for the sake of ratings or garnering attention, I'm not comfortable with that. But if a commentator truly believes something and is fair about it, then by all means, say it. Golf needs colorful personalities, personalities who aren't afraid to rock the boat. Personalities who are students of the game, who do their homework, who do an intense amount of research, as I know Brandle does. I appreciate commentators who are not afraid of speaking up or speaking out when they feel the need to. I think that's very important. Now, a few weeks ago, Brandle was interviewed by Adam Shupak of Golf Week, and they were discussing golf instruction and if certain golf swings, certain styles, are sustainable. It was a long discussion, and Brando said, in quotes, "the teachers are being exposed for their idiocy, but I stood on the range," he said, "with a prominent teacher who had acolytes all around him, who then went out and those acolytes talk with acolytes, and then they completely spread this flawed philosophy through all of teaching, and all teachers stuck to that ideal," end quote. He did go on to use a vulgar verb about these teaching philosophies, which he later apologized for the word he used. But his overall point, I think, was that he doesn't agree with many of the golf instruction being taught, and Then their teachings gain popularity via social media, and it becomes the way to swing. And the magazine lists that rank the top golf instructors are really more based on the instructor's marketability than whether he or she know what they are doing. And that's how I interpreted his comments that created another firestorm in the golf world. Now, I do see where he's coming from. He sees a lot of golf swings. He studies them. He played on the PGA Tour. I do feel that many young players are taught swings that are so mechanical that they lose their natural athleticism, which is not good. You do see a lot of cookie-cutter swings out there, particularly with many of the college players. Their swings, many of their swings look identical. Is there one way to swing a golf club? No. And there are a lot of varying theories. You know, what works for some certainly would not work for others. I mean, look at Jim Furyk. That swing is ugly, but Furyk has had just an incredible career on the PGA Tour and a lasting one. Raymond Floyd, Lee Trevino, Bubba Watson never took a golf lesson in his life, and he's won 2 Masters, and he's won 12 PGA Tour titles. When you're taking lessons, does the instructor take in consideration your athletic ability and work around your strengths and weaknesses? Many do. And why do professionals who are winning feel like they must change their swing? That always puzzled me. Well, perhaps the strongest statement Brendel Chamblee has said in the last 6 months or so is the opinion he stated about Patrick Reed after Reed was assessed that 2-stroke penalty at the Hero World Challenge last December for improving his line of play when he took those 2 practice swings in that bunker. He moved sand. Now, it's against the rules, as you know, to move or press down loose soil or sand or alter it in any way. You can ground your club, but you cannot improve your lie. So, you know, I've watched that footage over and over and over again, and twice in his practice swing, Reed's club movement took sand behind the ball. Was it natural intent on Patrick's part? And I mean, how could a tour player with that much experience not know, you know, what he's doing? When he was asked about it afterwards, Reed said that you just have to accept it and move on. He said he did not knowingly seek to improve his lie. It is my word against their word, he said. So how many of you have watched that footage? Do you think Patrick Reed thought he intentionally improved his lie? Do you think that's what he did? I watched a segment on the Golf Channel where Brendel Chamblee was asked his opinion of the Patrick Reed incident, and here's what Chamblee had to say.
To defend what Patrick Reed did is defending cheating. It's defending somebody breaking the rules. Everybody in the world of golf, and look, the world of golf eliminates borders. We are brought together by our love for the game and the love of the traditions of this game. And as far back as this game goes, at its inception, is you do not improve your lie. This is not a new rule. It's been around a long, long time. I don't care what camera angle. You can go overhead, you can go down the line, you can go face on. He would have known he was moving sand in the path of his club, improving his lie. So he's put his teammates in a very difficult situation. This was flagrant. This was absolutely flagrant. There's just no way, no camera angle that you could look at. You couldn't. Anybody in the world of golf that watched this was repugnant video to the world of golf.
You know, it's difficult to believe that what Patrick Reed did was not intentional. And if it was indeed intentional, I mean, I don't know how one thinks one could get away with that, you know, with the TV cameras looking, you know, televising everything. Well, after the Hero World Challenge, the President's Cup took place in Australia. And, you know, Patrick was on the American team. And the controversy followed him way over to Australia. You know, he did take a lot of heat from the fans over there. In fact, Reed's caddy, who happens to be his brother-in-law, shoved a fan that he said crossed the line, and he was removed from carrying Patrick's bag after the Saturday morning session of the President's Cup. And a while later, I guess, Chamblee got a cease and desist letter from Patrick's attorney demanding that he stopped referring to Patrick as a cheater. Now, when Brooks Koepka was asked if Reed was cheating on a Sirius XM radio show, here's what Brooks Koepka had to say.
Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, I don't know what he was doing, playing, you know, building sandcastles in the sand, but you know where your club is. I mean, I took 3 months off, and I can promise you, I know if I touch sand. I don't think it's one of those things where, you know, if you look at the video, obviously he grazes his hand twice, and then he still chops down on it. I guess, you know, the Astros are going through that right now. Jim Crane said it, you know, when he got asked, is it cheating? And he said, no, we just, you know, broke the rules. So, I know it's one of those things where I don't think if you play the game, you understand the rules, you understand, you know, the integrity that goes on. And I mean, there's no room for it. You know, I think a lot of times too, I think guys, and I'll be honest, I've seen it a couple times where it's like, whoa, I've seen some big names be like, whoa, that's not right. And I've bit my tongue. You know, a lot of times TV, you can't hide from the cameras and everything. And, you know, we bite our tongue a lot. It's one of those things, you know, guys have hit it in the rough and all of a sudden they've got 3 wood out and they're down there patting it down. It's interesting. It goes on a little bit more than people think.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody has something to say about it. In fact, Peter Costas said he saw Patrick Reed cheat on at least 4 occasions. Jaime Diaz said, and quote, it couldn't be an accident, end quote. So we'll get Brando Chambly's take on all of this now that the controversy has settled down, or has it? And I also want to talk to him about his comments about Brooks Koepka, Tiger, Jordan Spieth. Lots to discuss. And then at 7:40 this morning, Chip Beck, one of the great ambassadors in golf, will join us. Chip and I hosted a very memorable Viking River cruise as part of a Premier Golf Ryder Cup experience 2 years ago in France at the 2018 Ryder Cup. And I had an opportunity to get to know Chip and his lovely wife, Karen. And Chip and I hosted a couple Q&A sessions on that cruise, and he's just has an incredible background. He was a member of 3 Ryder Cup teams. He was the second player in the men's game to ever shoot a 59. He even had a hole-in-one on a par 4. So we'll talk to Chip Beck about the Ryder Cup. Now, as you know, the Ryder Cup is scheduled for September 25 to the 27th at Whistling Straits in Kohler, Wisconsin. And many of you who listen to this show heard Seth Waugh, the CEO of the PGA of America, tell me a couple weeks ago that although they realize the importance of hosting a Ryder Cup with spectators, they are starting to try to create some kind of virtual fan experience that they will try to be as creative as they can. Can you envision a Ryder Cup with no spectators? Well, and that could be a good possibility, and we'll get Chip Beck's take on that this morning, as well as some other things. A couple news items. Well, we know that the current plan for the PGA Tour is for the schedule to start June 11th at the Colonial in Fort Worth, and that the first 4 events will be played without fans. So you have the Colonial, June 18th to the 21st, the RBC Heritage in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Then you have the Travelers Championship in Cromwell, Connecticut, June 25th through the 28th. And then the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit, July 2nd through the 5th. And for now, the John Deere Classic in Illinois, which is supposed to be July 9 through 12, would be the first event where spectators would be allowed on the PGA Tour. And the tour sent a memo to players this past Thursday that said players exempt for this season, we'll keep the same status for the 2021 season that is scheduled to start in September unless they earn a higher ranking this season. So no one would lose a PGA Tour card. And the guys playing the Korn Ferry Tour will have to wait until next year before joining the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour champions announced their revised schedule for the 2020 season. The tour plans to restart the season July 31st through August 2nd in Michigan. Eight events have been canceled on the PGA Tour Champions, including the popular Dick's Sporting Goods Open. Now, the LPGA pushed their return from mid-June to mid-July. Their first tournament will be in Michigan, July 15 through the 18th. We know the U.S. Women's Open has been moved to December 10 through 13. The final event of their season will be the CME Group Tour Championship, moved to December 17 to 20th, so we're getting late in the year. And the KMPG Women's PGA Championship has been rescheduled to October 8th through the 11th at Aronimink Golf Club, where it was supposed to be. So that is pretty much all the top news so far. We are going to take a quick break and come back and talk to former PGA Tour player, the Golf Channel's Brandel Chamblee. We'll be right back.
At Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're giving personal auto insurance customers a 15% credit on their April and May premiums and providing billing relief to all customers affected by COVID-19. It's also why we're pledging $5 million in relief efforts to help our communities. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. To learn more, please visit travelers.com. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
Ann LaGorie is talking golf on Sunday morning with you, right here on The Fan.
This is going to follow him around like the video of Nixon saying, I'm not a crook, followed him
around.
How are you going to make this go away? As Jaime said, I've been watching golf my entire life. Mm-hmm. I have never seen anything so flagrant. Never. Flagrant disregard for the traditions of this game, which are to self-govern, self-police. Play the ball as it lies.
Well, welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann LaGorie. You just heard the voice of Brandel Chamblee on the Golf Channel talking about Patrick Reed. Brandel, former PGA Tour player who has been with the Golf Channel since 2004, serves as both a studio and on-site analyst. Welcome to Talking Golf, Brandel.
Nice to join you this morning, Ann. How are you?
I am good. Well, let's get right into it. I really respect you as a broadcaster. I think the game needs colorful commentators who are, you know, who aren't afraid to share their strong opinions. And you are known as one of the game's most respected analysts, and your outspoken opinions make you one of the industry's most controversial personalities. Some of your critics, though, say you do it for ratings and attention. I mean, how do you answer those critics, Brandel?
Well, I say I never say anything just to be provocative. I say things that I believe to be true that people may find provocative. And I think that's sort of the nuance. A famous English playwright by the name of Noel Coward once said that people are shocked by honesty but not by deceit. And I think, you know, by and large, you know, there's some truth to that. But my job as an analyst is to try to be accurate, try to be fair, and then try to tell our audience something that they haven't heard all day. You know, by the time I come on the air at, you know, whatever time, 6:30, 7 o'clock at night, I joke that everything that could be said about the golf has already been said about the golf. So, you know, I spend all day long watching to try to think of something that might be interesting to our audience, and then I try to share it with them. And I spend probably most of my time lauding the players. But occasionally, you know, it seems like once a week, something will pop up that is, you know, fairly controversial. Not quite as controversial as the clip that you just played. That was a little unprecedented in the world of golf. Incidents like that don't often happen and sort of present themselves in video form that, in my view, were fairly convincing. But most of the time I'm lauding the players. But the human nature being what it is, you know, you could spend an hour with somebody telling them how beautiful they are, nice they are, but then tell them you don't like their shoes, and that's all they'll remember.
Well, let's start with Patrick Reed, since we did come out with that cut of your talking about Patrick Reed. And, you know, you referred to him on the air. You actually didn't say as a cheater. You actually said to defend what Patrick Reed did is to defend cheating, which I thought was at least a softer approach. But obviously, well, you know what you meant. So
yeah, you know, I mean, looking at the video, I actually wasn't working the week of the hero. I was off that week. I believe it was Q School, actually. I was trying to get my card for the Champions Tour. But, you know, I came back the next week and was working. And so the video pops up because it's the, you know, it's the President's Cup. And, you know, I thought that it would impact the team. I thought it would be sort of disorienting to the team because it forced everybody to sort of, you know, protect the comments that were coming his way because they were protecting the team. It was odd. But really, I thought it was, you know, I thought there was two ways to look at that. Was it his problem or was it the game's problem? Because it's, you know, it has happened in the game that players, you know, occasionally pop up and do something that is a flagrant violation of the rule. But normally the game sort of takes care of that particular player, either scorn from players or disinterest from sponsors. But there's an accounting of that. You can't quite do something that's, you know, that flagrant, in my view, it's that flagrant, without getting some repercussions. But the larger picture was, is this a sort of a trend in the game of golf? Because the game has always been about self-governing, self-policing. I mean, that is what gives the game its greater interest. Or is this a trend in the game, sort of a catch-me-if-you-can mentality? Have we gone from self-governing to catch-me-if-you-can? And if the latter is true, well, then that's, you know, that's upsetting, because the great thing about this game is that it has always had sort of steadfast traditions that, by and large, the people that play it sort of adhere to. If you and I go out and play, and we have a couple of friends with us, and we all hit it all over the fairway, everybody trusts everybody in the group to play by the rules. Otherwise, the game's going to fall apart, and camaraderie is the best thing about this game. You can't. You're not all on a court. You're not all on a diamond where everybody's watching everybody. You're off in the trees or a bunker, and everybody needs to trust everybody. And that was the larger issue. I felt like that it was a teachable moment to the young boys and girls watching the game. That you know, we need to talk now about the traditions of this game. And so, you know, look, that's the way I framed it, and that's the way I understood it, or tried to anyway.
Well, we played a cut earlier in the show of Brooks Koepka, who said, you know, patting down the grass or the sand goes on a little bit more than people think. So to your point,
true.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, are we getting away from the integrity of the game, or are people just trying to get away with what they can get away with?
Well, it has always been, you know, I mean, again, the traditions of this game, by and large, have been great, and they do give it its vitality. But there's always been a handful of players, which is inevitable when you have 200-300 people competing in professional sports. Whatever the sport is, you're going to have a few that are going to try to fudge here or there. But the thing is that everybody in the history of the game knows who those players are. They don't talk about it much on the air. You know, the by and large, whatever they did didn't make it to video and didn't get on TV. So it was always just sort of a whispered hush-hush, you know, and everybody in the game of golf knows who they were. You know, so, and that's the reputation a player doesn't want, you'd like to think. But now then, you know, there's video everywhere. So it's very hard for somebody to do something that is so flagrant if they're a good player, because they're mostly on TV.
That's right.
But outside of that, I mean, again, the game takes care of those players just through sort of scorn, generally speaking.
Now, I know you got a cease and desist letter from his lawyer demanding that you stop referring to Reed as a cheater. So what were the ramifications of that, Randall?
Well, I mean, if he tried to cease and desist everybody, you know, talking about this, my goodness, the courtroom would be filled. So I wasn't the only one. I was just happened to be the only one that week for the most part. But since then, I mean, I think Brooks Koepka came out with comments that were pretty poignant on this matter, along with several other players and now several other commentators. So, you know, look, I mean, it you know, I gave the letter its due attention. I sent it to the proper attorneys, and you know, they let me know that I was, you know, at least from their perspective, that I was in my right lane. But, you know, if it goes any further, certainly I have plenty of my older brother owns a law firm of you know, considerable prestige. So, you know, there's no shortage of lawyers that contacted me. But again, you know, I felt like I was just doing my job, which was to, as accurately as I could, frame this discussion. And hopefully that it, you know, it goes away, that, you know, this is a learning moment for Patrick, and, you know, on the golf course, he conducts himself a little bit better than what we saw at the Hero.
Let's talk about, we'll move to another comment that got a lot of attention, your most recent comments about, in quote, golf teachers being exposed for their idiocy, saying that, in quote, flawed teaching philosophies end more careers than help, end quote. Do you regret those comments at all, or take any of those back?
Well, I regret a few of the words. I would like to have tackled myself on a few of those words, but, you know.
And you did apologize for the vulgar term.
No, I mean, you know, talking about golf is a lot like playing golf. Sometimes you know, you make a bogey or two. But in general, my comments were about two or three teachers that were prevalent on the PGA Tour. And because they were so prevalent and in vogue, their ideas populated a lot of teaching. Not all of it, you know. I mean, the world of teaching is, just here in the United States, upwards of 30,000 people. I don't presume to say that that's the lion's share of them were adopting these ideas, but certainly the higher profile, a lot of the higher profile teachers were in favor of sort of a centered head position, or even a left-leaning head position, maintaining that on the backswing, restricted lower body movement, clubs in front, you know, arms in front of you, restricted arm turn, and that proliferated teaching for the better part of 30 years, and. You know, my argument was that, look, YouTube made it very easy for somebody to stand on a range, pull up videos of, you know, every generation of players, even the best players now, and say, well, I don't see that represented amongst the greats. And so I think, you know, the pendulum in at least not all teaching, but, you know, amongst tour players, it has changed. You know, there's no more this idea that you need to swing around a centered head. Everybody knows, every single teacher in the world now, you know, knows that that's a hard position to maintain, because there's so much evidence available to the contrary. You know, there's not a single great player that doesn't move laterally in their backswing. So, you know, my comments were really directed at just, you know, to a handful of teachers. And look, I took lessons from these teachers. I took these lessons. I stood on the range and tried to do these things. And you know, you're standing there talking to somebody who's on the cover of magazines, who's voted the best teacher here or there. And my beef really is with, you know, not only just the ideas that they were teaching, but the fact that there's not an objective way to judge teachers. And I don't want to do that to castigate any teachers. I want to know who the best are. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at, well, just look at the top 50 teacher rankings. I mean, you go back to 2010 to 2020, there's been one person at the top. Now, I'm not saying that Butch Harmon isn't a great teacher. He certainly is. Fabulous teacher. But there's only been one player named number one in the last 10 years. There's been 10 different number ones in men's professional golf. So to think that, you know, the same people sort of populate these lists, to me it does a disservice to the 27,000 other men and women in the PGA of America, when we could use objective criteria to judge who the best teachers are. And if
we... Right, and many of them who are best at marketing themselves and getting that attention, as you say, on social media, you know, obviously their names are going to stand out, and that could... persuade, you know, these magazines to name them in the top 100. You know, and I do tend to agree with your notion that modern golf instruction is robbing players of that natural athleticism. I mean, many of these young players you see out there, whether professionally or playing college golf, they have these kind of robotic-like swings. Every swing looks identical to each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think less and less so. I mean, you know, we're beginning to see, you know, young players come out with, highly idiosyncratic golf swings that have a lot of movement to them and a lot of power. But, you know, the top 50 being populated by teachers who either work with tour players or having an affiliation with a magazine, again, it doesn't necessarily disqualify them, but is it enough to convince me that they are indeed amongst the top 50 teachers? And, you know, look, to the PGA of America's credit, they are coming out this summer, or they were, and we'll see if it comes out. I mean, there's obviously a lot of uncertainty in the world right now, but there was scheduled to come out this sort of objective way to judge teachers, which, again, there's all kinds of metrics, objective metrics that, you know, the world of golf can be using to judge teachers. And look, there can still be this subjective list, you know, who we think there is, but there should also be an objective list. Because I would like to know who's having the most success in the world of teaching, because I think it would better the game of golf. You know, there's such an intrinsic value to the game of golf. I don't necessarily want to know who can gain the most money teaching. I don't begrudge them for making that money, but I want to know who is having the most success with average golfers. You know, there may be somebody out there teaching on grass mats in Montana who's had incredible success taking 20 handicappers to 12s in a year. But we don't know because, you know, they're not on a PGA Tour driving range, or they don't have an affiliation with a magazine. So there needs to be at least two lists, in my view, one that's not as political or subjective and one that is more objective.
Brando, let's talk about Jordan Spieth. You had some critical things to say about his swing and his instructor, Cameron McCormick. I mean, here's a guy, Spieth, who just had incredible success when he first started out, you know, winning the Masters, the U.S. Open in 2015, the Open Championship in 2017. And, you know, his ranking has dropped outside of the top 50 last I looked. I mean, do you think Jordan's issues are swing issues, or is it more mental, or a combination of both? I personally think he just overanalyzes on everything, and he puts so much expectation on himself, obviously, because of his early success. But what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think it's easy to look at, you know, his golf swing now versus when he was playing his best golf and point out differences and say, there it is, you know, there's the differences. Why doesn't he just go back to that? But I think those are more the symptoms than the cause. To me, the cause is, you know, in my view, it would be the lack of clarity that produces the best movements. And I'm convinced that if he had, you know, some clarity, some stillness, some quiet on the driving range, that he would find his way towards the shot patterns, the release patterns, and the athletic movements that he previously had. When he was playing his best golf, he had, you know, a slight kick to his golf swing, you know, a trigger move to begin his golf swing. I mean, that's common amongst almost every single great player that's ever played. Some trigger move that says, you know, we're an athlete. And then, you know, obviously he had different movement patterns in his golf swing completely than he has right now. But I think he would find those more easily if he were in an atmosphere of quiet and stillness. You know, we're on a set at Live From, and, you know, we watch before they tee off and after they tee off, and we watch Monday through Sunday every single shot. And so, yeah, we see the sort of frantic look of teacher and coach relationship between Jordan and his coach. And it's not to say that Cameron's not a good teacher. He certainly is a good teacher. Butch Harmon worked with four players that ascended to number one spot in the world, and all of them fired him. It's not that they fired him because he was a bad teacher. It's like they just wanted a different set of ideas. You know, it just happens that, you know, ideas are not as fresh. The movements aren't working. You need to go get a second opinion. And, you know, that's just not unusual in the world of teaching. But, you know, I mean, look, I give Jordan a lot of credit for his loyalty. But when it comes to his golf game, and I think, generally speaking, the best players, they need some quiet to find their genius, so to speak. And
well, why again, do these guys, Brando, why do they, tinker with their swings? I mean, they're always looking for perfection, you know, whether it's Jordan or a Tiger or whomever. But why, try to change something if they're, if it was so successful for them? I mean, I don't know why Jordan, why is he changing his swing?
Yeah, I mean, the enticements are there, you know, that there's a luxury now because, you know, they can all afford to have teachers around. And the idea on paper sounds good, right? And have somebody there constantly to watch you, to videotape you, to sort of keep the pendulum from swinging, widely to sort of off the game to, to another movement over here to sort of get back to where you are, and then you overdo the movement. So on paper, it sounds good. But you think about it, if you had a teacher around you constantly, nobody's going to swing perfect. There's always going to be some aesthetic ideal that you would want to get to. Looking through the video camera, it's never going to look perfect. So there would always be this tendency to want to change it. You know, I recently did this show with Nick Doherty at Sky Sports where Rory came on and sort of talked us through the stretch at the Players' Championship 2019. And I thought it was interesting that Rory said, and Rory, again, he goes to the golf tournaments without his coach. His coach is, he certainly still, works with Michael Bannon and so forth, but he doesn't have him on site. And early that week, he said that, his change of direction was too steep. And rather than try to change it, he just played with the shot pattern that steepness gave him, which was a left-to-right shot pattern. So the benefit of that was that he could get up on 16 and take it over the trees without worrying about it going left. And that he could, get on 18 and take it at the water like he did on Sunday, Saturday, all week long. He took aggressive lines off 18. Without worrying about it going left. So he just played with this quote-unquote fault and made the best of it. And
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I only have like a minute and a half, so we could talk hours. Let's get to Tiger, because I know you've been critical of, his swing changes as well. What are your latest thoughts on Tiger? I know you said back in 2018 that he got the least out of his talent more than anyone in history.
Yeah, well, I just said he left a lot on the table more than any player in history, because if he hadn't decided to change his golf swing in 98 to 2000, and then again from 2003 to 2005, and then again from 2010 to 2012, his win rate, you could have easily accumulated, double-digit victories on the PGA Tour and, could have easily got him 25 major championships.
But he changed his swing because of all the injuries, Brandel.
That's hard to say. I mean, people will love to say that the swing caused the injuries. His workout routine, even recently, Tiger said that his running caused his injuries. So I don't have any doubt that his workouts and his running caused his injuries. I never quite understood his workout routine. But again, I mean, we're talking about the guy who's played the greatest golf of all time, and they'll be talking about him 500 years from now if they're still playing golf. He came along and did things nobody could ever imagine. There was always a rub in this game. If golf gave you great ball striking, then you struggled to run his short game. If you had a great short game like Sevy and Phil, then you were inaccurate off of the tee or not that precise. Tiger came along and he had, Crenshaw's putting and Sevy scrambling and Phil scrambling and Nicklaus's length and with his irons, Hogan's control. So you look at Tiger and you're like, well, there's no statistics that can sum this guy up. You can't get your arms around the circumference of his talent. It's just, but it was mind-boggling to me that he would change that technique. And then once he got back on form, he'd change it again. And once he got back on form, he'd change it again. So, I mean, that's part of his legend and, enigmatic talent that he was. He was never satisfied with the status quo, even when he dominated.
Brando, promise me you'll come back on. There's never enough time. And real quickly,
real
with the Golf Channel moving operations to Connecticut, will that affect you at all or no?
Sure, certainly. Yes, of course. I mean, at the very least, I'll be spending a lot of time in Connecticut, and perhaps I'll move up there. I'm not quite sure yet how that's going to play out, but you know, definitely I'll be spending a lot more time up north. That's for sure.
Well, stay so. Well. Give Bailey my best, and
thank you, Ann. That's very
come
nice
on again.
I will do it. Thank you very much for what you do for the game of golf, Ann.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Always
bye-bye.
A pleasure talking to you. Brandel Chamblee. All right, we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk to Mr. 59 Chip Beck. We'll be back.
At Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're giving personal auto insurance customers a 15% credit on their April and May premiums and providing billing relief to all customers affected by COVID-19. It's also why we're pledging $5 million in relief efforts to help our communities. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. To learn more, please visit travelers.com. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
Ann LaGorie is talking golf on Sunday morning with you, right here on The Fan.
Well, welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann LaGorie. Hope you're having a great morning so far. And yes, the show is never long enough. And I am so excited to bring in Chip Beck, who is one of the great ambassadors in the game of golf. Chip, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Ann. You're the hardest working person in all of golf, I think.
I think you're right. You have a number of distinctions in golf. You were the second player ever to shoot a 59 in a PGA Tour event. You made a hole-in-one on a par 4, which I think is incredible. I want to talk to you about that in a second. And you are a member of 3 Ryder Cup teams. And, you know, with all of your Ryder Cup experiences, what are your thoughts about, you know, the Ryder Cup and the possibility that this Ryder Cup coming up in our country, in Wisconsin, at Whistling Straits, September 25th through the 27th, they may not have spectators. It has not been decided yet, but can you imagine a Ryder Cup with no spectators?
Well, it's such an international gallery, too. People be coming from all over the world to see the Ryder Cup, especially in Wisconsin, which it's the most beautiful golf course. Whistling Straits is right on Lake Michigan, right on the moraine. It's just absolutely beautiful. So it's hard to imagine that, I mean, it's wide open. It seems like it'd be a safe place to have a Ryder Cup. It's great. It has beautiful vistas, and I think that the galleries will be pretty far back, and it'll be in it'll just be absolutely a wonderful Ryder Cup. So I know everybody in Wisconsin and up here in Chicago, they're really looking forward to it. So
yeah, I mean,
I don't know what to think about that.
It's a piece of property. I mean, there's, you know, and obviously, well, but with fans and spectators coming in, you know, they are close together, you know, they get rowdy,
oh, yeah.
But it is such a big part of a Ryder Cup. And, you know, I wanted to, Seth Waugh came on this show a couple weeks ago, and you know, when I asked him about the possibility of hosting a Ryder Cup with no spectators, he said that it would be hard to imagine, but they've started talking about whether you can create some kind of virtual fan experience that they want to try to get as creative as they can. You know, it just shows that people running golf have to have plan A, B, and C during these uncertain times.
Boy, we really do, but it seems like that's the hardest event to have a Ryder Cup event where nobody can really. I don't understand how it works, you know, with no fans, because the fans really do get so excited, and they're a big part of the match. I mean, I remember coming the last Ryder Cup in France. You know, would come the Sunday morning, everybody going to the range. When the Americans came, they just kind of walked up. And then when the British team or the European team came down, it was like pandemonium. And they just clapped for 30 minutes for them, just walking to the range. So it's pretty exciting for the players as well. But I don't know if it – I don't know. It'd be fascinating to see how a virtual reality could come into play for golf. The
yeah,
fun is
exactly.
Being there.
What does that mean? It'll be interesting to see what they come up with. Well, I know Padraig Harrington recently, you know, raised the question if, you know, the Ryder Cup should take one for the team, meaning even if you can't have fans at the Ryder Cup this year, you know, it would be in the best interest of sport to have it because it's going to be on TV, you know, the European tour, the tours need the revenue. So let's see what they decide. But the good news is, Chip Beck, golf is being played in more states now during this pandemic. They've opened up courses. And I know you're working with Pitch Fix, and they've come up with the Pick Cup. Talk a little bit about that and how it makes golf safer to play in this, you know, pandemic that we're in.
Yeah, what's the pickup? What's so good about it? It's a it doesn't tear up your lip of the cup because it's the perfect size. It's got a universal adaptive system that goes on all three flagpoles that are different diameters, so you can adjust it where the ball can just the pickup can sit right beneath the surface of the green, so you don't have to worry about touching the flagpole. And it's, you know, you can play it and use it in competitions. So they could use it at the Ryder Cup. It's USGA approved and all that. So it conforms to the rules of golf. And anyways, it's a real solid way to get your ball out of the hole during this COVID problem.
And what does it look like, Chip?
It's like a little rubberized cup that it's about a quarter inch on around the, it's a circular little disc that you put in there, and it fits around the flag very tightly. So when you throw the flag down, it doesn't tear up the green because it's got a rubberized edge. So it's like scalloped a little bit, but it's the right material, and it's, you know, you can have advertising in it. It's just a really nice, convenient way to make sure that your ball didn't go all the way to the bottom. And then in normal times, you can just pull the flagpole out, and it'll get your ball out of the cup without tearing up the lip. So that's the biggest problem people have, tearing up the lip. So anyways, it's a if the ball flies in there, it'll go down into the cup too. It's not so hard it's going to ricochet off, you know. So I think that's important as well.
It can be installed higher up in the cup, like just below the lip of the cup, so golfers don't have to touch anything, which is so important.
That's right.
You know, we want golf courses to be open. What are you in Chicago, or where are you?
I'm in Florida, and we're just opening up now. And it's been 90 degrees down here for 3 months. I don't know if this isn't safe. I don't know what's going to happen to the rest of the world. Because it's like the weather's been perfect down here on the west coast of Florida.
Yeah. And golf courses in the Orlando area have been open. They never closed, but they have been very careful with all these restrictions. I just think it's healthier for people to have the opportunity to go out and play golf if they adhere to social distancing. I know in New York, the courses were reopened last weekend, not the pro shops, but Scott played. He made his tee time online. He carried his bag. And everybody kept their distance. So, yeah. I mean, and I think New Jersey just opened up golf courses too, which is important. Chip, talk about, you know, the hole in one on a par four. It, you know, that fascinates me. How long was that hole? I'll never forget playing in Alice Cooper's celebrity golf event in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
And Daniel Baldwin, the actor, Alec Baldwin's brother, was in he was in my foursome. And he had a hole in one on a par four, and
oh,
of course that became the talk of the tournament. So, talk about your hole in one on a par four. How long was that hole?
It was 316 yards long, but I was just trying to get it in front of the green so I could, you know, maybe make a two. But it just hit hard, and it looked like it was, you know, like the perfect little fade going in there. It was out of bounds to the left. It was a big rise up on the left side of the green. So my fade shot worked beautifully, and it hit hard. And so it just, I mean, it hit hard and stayed in. It's a miracle it stayed in. But, you know, I always thought it was kind of fake. You know, you'd hear about the ball hitting the highway, running down, hitting a car and going in the hole. I thought, well, these hole-in-one on par fours, it's not much of a golf course if people are doing that. But I played 47 years, and I thought, wow, I've never seen that before. That's really a miracle. So kind of funny how it happens.
It was weird at the Omaha Classic, right?
It was, Champions Golf Course. But it was the kind of thing that I was really – it was funny because – the kids were clamoring for the ball, and I said, "No, I'm gonna save it for my dad," because I'd always given my balls to my dad, you know, and I just wanted to keep the ball myself. Unfortunately, it did my dad. It got in the paper that I saved it for my dad, and my dad called me and said, "Jim, it made me feel so good you thought about me." I felt like a heel. So that was kind of funny, but that's life, isn't it?
I love it. Man. What else are you working on? I know you're a spokesperson for Arcus and the U.S. Adaptive Golf Alliance International Championship. You were there last year to inspire the players with disabilities. And aren't they inspiring, though, when you watch these golfers?
The most amazing organization. And they'll, you know, if you have a unique problem or physical issue from Iraq or any kind of problem, they'll help you adapt to golf, and they'll help you get involved. And so it's probably the greatest organization we have going in golf right now. People really love it, and it is truly inspirational. So I love being involved with that. You know, Arcus was bringing a lot of people to the Ryder Cup, and we were having a big Ryder Cup event at Whistling Straits, and all that's been canceled now. So it's really disappointing what's going on.
Oh, and, so they canceled their event already.
Oh, yeah, so it's really hard. Huh. That's hard for everybody. But right. The Adaptive Golf Alliance is really a truly great organization. If you ever hear about it, it's nice. They're helping golf get better. There's no question about it.
And to think of all the fun we had at the Ryder Cup in France, right? Just two years ago. How the world has changed since then, Chip Beck.
Oh, I never dreamed this could happen in our lifetime. I hopefully saved enough lives, you know, because, I mean, the plague's really knocked out half of Europe, you know, at times. But it seems like this might not have been as severe as they were thinking, you know. Dr. Fauci said it was going to be 2 million people dying in America alone. I thought, oh, wow, this is really a bad plague, you know. But anyways, we'll figure it out, won't we? Everybody's going to do the right thing and do the best what's, you know, for golf, right, and for themselves. But the thing that's happened is it seems like golf and being outside is the best environment. Everybody that's died from COVID, they've been in, you know, enclosed areas. So golf is probably the best place to be, the safest place to be outside. So, I mean, Central Park's full. My daughters, you know, they took a walk and a run yesterday. I mean, it's packed up there.
Chip, thank you so much. Stay well. My best to Karen. Thanks for joining me.
Have a great day. Thanks, Ann.
You too. My thanks to Chip Beck, to Brandel Chambly, to Pete Hoffman in the studio. Talking Golf was brought to you by Travelers Insurance for auto, home, and business. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Be sure to follow me on social media. We'll continue these conversations. Rick Wolf's Sports Edge is up next. Stay well, stay active, stay positive. I'll talk with you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann Liguori.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. The Fan, WFAN.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.